thank you. There is a presentation just behind you for those who want to follow through. I won't be adding a lot to the text that went out, and again, sorry it was so late. We've had so many conflicts in the last couple of weeks. What I'm hoping is this is a session, rather than some of the other sessions we've had where we've asked you to think about choices that have been faced by the board. This is actually an opportunity for you it's like a brainstorming session. What I want to take out of this is a whole lot of ideas that we can carry out of this room and actually start to implement in building our research capability. So really, it is all about building really positive ideas in here. In putting the paper together, I was also a little torn between going here and saying we've got a completely blank sheet of paper or an open blank canvas and saying, well, tell us what we should do. So I didn't want to imply that we're doing nothing or hadn't thought about this. We've actually thought quite a lot about this. But on the other hand, I don't want to sort of lay out what our thinking is, because I don't want to constrain you either. So it's a tricky balance for me. But essentially, what we're looking at doing is the trustees have indicated to us, and this is straight out of the report, that to provide leadership and thinking in the field of financial reporting, we should establish or facilitate the establishment of a dedicated research capability. And essentially, what we have to do now is for Hans and Ian have got to put a recommendations together and a plan, essentially for the trustees for presentation in January. So what we want to do is to establish a clear blueprint, I think, for how we establish the research capability. We've actually established a little internal committee within the ISB to do that, with some senior staff and board members, and we started to think a little bit about that. But before we get too far, I do want to go on and answer one first question, that's what is research? It became clear, I think, when we embarked on our agenda consultation that all people saw were tables of statistics with little asterisks to indicate whether it was significant at the 98th percentile or 99th percentile. So it was kind of like this empirical research that appears in refereed journals, particularly Journal of Accounting Research, Journal of Accounting Economics, and so on. It's not. It's wider than that, much, much wider. What we have when we talk about research is more about evidence. And so, you know, it certainly is that there will be some archival market research that is of interest to us. I don't think we've got very many people capable of actually doing it, but we should be in a position to at least be able to read or have somebody explain it to us. Some simple descriptive statistics can be helpful. Surveys, experiments, modelling, actually going and talking to people. You'll see in a minute that some of the context it's important in. But we take this as being a very, very wide thing. Essentially, you know, research is about gathering information to answer questions. And in our case, it's about answering questions to help the board members make decisions about choices in financial reporting. The other thing too, it's very important for us, and I think this is part of the research capability, it's very important that the consumer or the user, the person reading the research, actually understands its strengths and limitations. And a very, very simple example of that would be if you went and found a couple of examples in practice, you know, so you've got a sample size of 2, for example, and then you make some inferences that are more general about the whole population. You've got to be very, very careful with those. So you have to understand the limitations of any research, the context in which it was constructed. You have to understand about causality. It's very easy to often see when events happen in life, you'll see a share market reaction. But there's a difference between coincidence or a correlation and causality. So you have to understand the underlying things that are driving behaviour. So it's not just about us looking at research output, but actually being able to understand its limitations and its strengths, how it can actually help us with our decision making. Now, why are we going to do this? The reason we want to do this is it's a whole purpose as staff members is to help the ISB members make the right choices between competing solutions. So, you know, often there are two or three good answers. Some are better than others in financial reporting. They'll often involve trade-offs between costs and benefits, and we're trying to help people make the right decisions, the right choices. And if we can provide evidence and support to that decision-making, we think that'll help in much better decision-making. And just as importantly, and perhaps more importantly for a lot of people here, by being more open about what evidence we've looked at and we're considered, we'll actually be able to demonstrate to others why the ISB made those choices. And this is right throughout our whole process. You can imagine we had something like 30 different projects that were identified for us as part of the agenda consultation. How do you pick one? How do you pick to do five or four? What's persuasive? And the sorts of things we have to look at is, in practice, is there actually a problem? How is there diversity in practice? You know, how deep is the problem? Is it widespread? Is it geographical? You know, what sort of demographics is it in? Having that sort of information can help you identify what priorities ought to be. We've actually got some excellent examples of that in joint ventures, for example. You know, we've got quite clear documented evidence of in two sorts of areas. One is around about half of all businesses applying IFRS using with joint ventures, around half use proportionate consolidation and half use the equity method. It's clearly documented diversity in practice. The interesting thing was within at least two jurisdictions, I think Spain and France, there was clearly all proportionate consolidation, and in Australia it was all the equity method. So you don't get geographical splits necessarily, but internationally we had quite a lot of diversity in practice. We also supported that with some simple case studies. We're aware of some individual contracts in joint ventures where we know of one contract with three parties, all three interpreted the contract differently. So there are three different accounting methods flowing from that. And so that actually builds up a case for why you actually do need to try and fix a standard. Interpretations committee, you know, they deal with diversity in practice. You know, we could sit there and ask the committee members if they think there's diversity. We could ask standard setters and so on. Really, what we're looking for is moving to more systematic way of collecting evidence, so we actually do understand that there is diversity in practice and where that diversity might be emerging. And so when they make the interpretations committee makes a decision to go ahead with something, it's based on some evidence to actually support the assertions that they're listening to. Because often we receive an application for an interpretive request and there's just a clear assertion there is diversity in practice. Well, it might be that two people disagree, or it might be that there's actually widespread diversity. It's helpful to know potential costs of implementation, how useful information is. Research can help with a lot of that, and it could be that we use academic research, it could be that we do some of our own, or we work with the accounting firms, with the investment houses and others, to actually try and understand a little bit more about how people use information, about how information is processed. We understand that the costs of processing information. We use it in post-implementation reviews. That's a good example for us. We've actually had an academic who's been done a literature review for IFRS 8, that's operating segments, and we've got some quite a good sort of body of evidence building about what the effect of IFRS 8 has been in terms of costs, the way it's changed how people report, and in terms of relating that to share prices and information or informativeness of the information. And we're supplementing that with interviews and surveys with investors and preparers about their experiences with IFRSA. And it's equally valid to look at, you know, this peer-reviewed journal research with interviews, discussions, and other information that we collect ourselves. Now, state of play. We do have existing capabilities. We've got, I think I noted in the paper, we've got at least three people with PhDs or research backgrounds. We've got board members. We often have an academic, for example, on our board, or people experienced with that. It's one of those interesting things in terms of getting people up to speed with research. There are two ways to get the average up. You either get everybody to increase their ability to interpret research, or you just simply say, I only want five people who can do it anyway, and just chop the rest off. And then the ones who you've designated as being the research readers, you can actually up their skills. That's probably the approach we're looking at taking here. We don't need to get every single staff member or board member capable of reading the Journal of Accounting Economics. As long as we've got a few people who can read it and explain and interpret and build that into the analysis, that's what we're looking to do. So we do have some people with some skills in that area. We also have some resources. I don't want to tell you what we've got because that's one of the questions today. I'd like you to think about what resources you think we should have access to. So, you know, if you're here representing the insurance industry, and you'd like to think that we're making decisions about insurance standards, what sort of information do you think we should have access to and we should be looking at? We do incorporate research, as I said, in our agenda decisions. One thing you're going to start to see even more of, and I know some people around the table will be pleased to hear this, in our basis for conclusions for the next exposure draft for leases, you'll actually see a comprehensive effect analysis built into that, and that's something that the board will actually be balloting and voting on as part of the process. So we're actually building into our basis a far more comprehensive effect analysis. That's hopefully evidence-based. And as I mentioned, with post-implementation reviews as well. So, as I said, do have a little working group that's been meeting to discuss this. And these are a couple of our preliminary thoughts. The first thing is that we need to be practical. Whatever information we get, whatever evidence we collect, we need to be able to share that with the board and explain it. We need to be able to share that with others and explain that in our basis for conclusions and in our effect analysis as well, for example. We also think that we're not going to be a funder of academic research. We're not going to sit there and put aside £1 million into a little fund and start to call for research grants and fund people directly. We want to encourage. I use the word sponsor, but unfortunately it doesn't translate very well. Some people sponsor intellectually, is what we would like to do, but not necessarily sponsor financially. We want to be seen as a thought leader, but not a blue sky thinker. The definition of blue sky thinking is to basically dump everything and just start off afresh. Now, we're an incremental body as opposed to a revolutionary body, I think. But we do want to be seen as being a thought leader. And we need better access to research. We're actually okay at it, but we could do a lot better, and we need better access to researchers. We've had very good experience with a couple of people, but we need to work out, and we're also quite aware of some of the constraints. You need to think long-term in some of these areas, because people applying for leave, for example, for sabbatical leave, will do so 18 months, 2 years before that's actually due. So we have to get our planning in place to make sure that we've got staffing sort of planned out 2 to 3 years in advance. And similarly, if we're going to get access to research that's relevant to us, we actually have to anticipate that quite a long time in advance. We've been very fortunate, for example, KPMG fund and help with a research initiative, and there were a couple of areas where they were short of good projects as part of that initiative, and they came to us. And we suggested about 5 topics related to IFRS 3, business combinations, that we thought would be very helpful to get some more information about when we start our post-implementation review next year. So again, we probably have to think about 18 months, 2 years out for any of these things to get good research that's focused on us. But we'd like to work out ways that we can actually do that. So the questions for you. As said, we'd love to know what you think the minimum requirements should be for a research library for us or an IPS library. I've got an inverted commas in there because our perception is there are probably some good books or texts and physical materials that are helpful, but we suspect most of our library will be electronic in nature. We have access to some electronic journals and some other data. I won't say what it is because I'd like to hear what you think we ought to have access to. And it may be that, you know, running a library, it's a pretty onerous job. Is there something we could do better? Is there somebody who runs a particular research centre or has access that we should bootstrap off? In other words, we should actually lever off their resources. We've tried informally a couple of times, but I think it would be helpful to see what sort of other possibilities there are. One of the things we have to do is think about how to fund this. The trustees mentioned in their report that we would have a separate funding initiative for this, a separate sourcing of funding. And have you got some ideas of how we might do that? We want to do that in a way that doesn't undermine the independence of the ISB, so we don't want to be seen going out there buying results or answers that we actually want, but actually supporting research generally or supporting researchers. What type of activities should we promote? And to give you a sense, I can't remember the date, it's the Thursday of Board Week. The University of Oxford is running a research forum, and we have offered our our boardroom is the location, so we've actually set up, I think there are going to be 20 researchers from around Europe, and plus some from the US who are actually video conferencing into that. And it's not our research session, but we're actually helping facilitate that, and we'll be participating. We go to the European Accounting Association, and we often give talks there. We listen and look at the research. We do the same with the AAA in the US. What should we be involved with? And then how do we communicate our research needs to researchers? In other words, how do we find something that they might actually research for us? For the academics here, they'll know there's some constraints. Things that are relevant for us, that are helpful to us, don't necessarily get you promoted. So we've got some tricky little issues to get through as well. And lastly, we've been asked to look at what sort of projects or thought leadership or non-standard specific things might be helpful. I'll tease out just a few that I don't know if they're good or bad. We hear often about the ISB's got an Anglo-Saxon bias, given the composition of its board and staff. What is Anglo-Saxon way of thinking? How does it actually affect decision making? Is there anything in standard setting that is affected by that balance? What are the effects of an IFRS? It's clearly an issue. The effects of translation. There's some work was done, the Scottish Institute funded, and there's a perception that the more principle-based standards you have in terms of your language, actually the more challenging it is to translate that into other languages. The more specific the terms, the easier it is to translate. So does translation actually have an effect? We get some general things about disclosure. You know, we hear often, well, if it's in the footnotes, it's not given the same meaning. I'll look at the auditors here in the face and say, you clearly don't audit it with the same rigor if it's in the notes as if it's on the face. That's a claim we often hear. So there is some research we know into placement, about where you actually put information, whether it's perceived or weighted differently by the users, whether it's weighted differently by the preparers or the auditors. Is that something we should be doing? Because if you're sitting there making a decision about where information should be disclosed, maybe that's a factor we should think about. That's not standard specific. That's research that's more pervasive, I guess, in terms of accounting standards. So, you know, there are lots of things that I guess we could think about encouraging. Again, not necessarily for us to do, but think about the sorts of things that we would like some information about. All of those things, as I said, this is more of a thought fest, I hope, because I'd like to take a bag of good ideas out of here that we can actually build into this blueprint for how we develop a capability. So, happy to answer any questions, because I don't want you going into this session with misconceptions about where our thinking's heading, about what we think research is, etc.
Any questions of Alan before we move to the breakouts? All right, April, sorry.
Sorry. Alan, thank you for that presentation. In the paper, where you, on the front page, give us the extract from the IFRS Foundation strategy review. I just had a couple of questions. I just wouldn't mind a fraction more explanation of what you think thought leadership is. I understand what if you explain to us what blue sky thinking is and therefore what thought leadership is not, but just a fraction more comments on that. And also in here, the trustees indicate a more active engagement of the academic community. And while you've touched on that in your presentation, I get a sense that the nature of some of the research isn't necessarily, you wouldn't necessarily go to academics for it because of the issues around the types of research that they are required to do versus this evidence-based, more practical. But maybe I've misunderstood. If you could just clarify a couple bit of that.
Okay. I'm not absolutely sure what thought leadership is, and I think that's part of our role, is to define how much thought leadership we should be applying. But I think it's fairly clear to say that if we are a global standard setter, we should be a leader, not a follower, in identifying what is best practice for financial reporting. And whether that's by doing work ourselves or encouraging others to do that, we should be seen as facilitating and trying to get the best answers to things. You know, that's the way I would think it quite loosely. But I think getting some feedback on what you think thought leadership is, because the agenda consultation was quite clear. I think we used the word blue sky thinking in there, in the agenda consultation document. Now, boy, people turned on that and said, no way. And I think they turned on that because they didn't want us to basically dump everything we do. And, you know, I used to loosely say, lock somebody in a basement, close all the doors and windows and lock them in there for 6 months and come out with a thought piece. They wanted us to be far more grounded in that. And I'm happy for others to, you know, to have a much wider brief and get those people in to talk to us, but not necessarily for us to do that ourselves. The second thing about the engagement with the academic community, that's the reason I started with a definition of research, is that I think that as soon as we started to talk about research, people eyes glaze over and they do think of empirical studies with lots of stats in it, for example. And that's not what it's about. It doesn't mean that we are not interested in the academic community, but there are certainly some studies that academics could do for us, and the IFRS 3 and also operating segments are good examples. We've seen some really good work, but often, and I hope that's not frustrating for academics, often what we'll do is what I call a sort of a body of evidence research. Well, actually, when we have a look at a general area, we might find 15 or 20 articles that are very helpful and give you, that paint a reasonably complete picture of something. But the incremental contribution that each study makes is very, very small. We're just collecting a body of evidence. And we're not necessarily the best people to do that either. The academic community are great at literature reviews and also helping filter out the better studies from the not so good studies. Because just because it's in a journal doesn't mean it's a great study. You need somebody to actually help do that filtering. And Ann Tarker, who did the work for us in operating segments, did a great job on that because she was able to give warning to the board about not so much the quality of the research, but limitations on the research. And that's something where somebody's got great skills for us. So we do want to draw on the academic community.
Quick point, Fagonia, please.
Well, I think that it's a good idea that ISB is now looking for research, although you are defining research in a different or limited way as gathering evidence about what companies are doing or users are using, how users use their accounting, the information. But if the EAA can, if you formalize this group, this research group, as a more or less permanent group, I think that it would be good that the EAA takes part in that group if you think that we could also help you in getting research that could be useful for your purposes. But in any case, the Financial Reporting Standards Committee of the EAA will continue helping you in identifying the research we are doing and in perhaps putting you in contact with some researchers that are doing things that are particularly interesting for your interest. But I have the impression that some of the type of research you are interested in is more written in national journals, but maybe they are not in English, because our main, as researchers, as academics, we are forced to do such a sort of research which is more empirically based, more statistically based, and these very top journals don't take into account the type of things you are interested in. So perhaps in the local journals, national journals, there are more things which are not in English that could be useful for your purposes, because it's more information, gathering information about what companies do, how users use their accounts.
Just very quickly to those. One is, you said narrow, I hope wide. If I implied narrow in terms of research, more empirical or more about what companies do, I hope you think wider, please, because just some of the intellectual thinking about concepts, for example, we're doing conceptual framework projects up and running as fast as we can go, and we're interested in getting debates and analysis of people's conceptual thinking. We do also use economic models, for example. They're very important for us because if we're developing accounting requirements, then you clearly want to ground them in sound economic principles. So theoretical models, things like the economic property rights literature is very, very helpful to us. But you also touch on an excellent point there. There's probably some very good research in languages that we don't understand. And getting that out into our hands, I think, is a very important and powerful thing.
And I think that's the sort of thing that we can discuss in the breakout groups is, you know, how do we make best use of what's already being done and networking as well as things that aren't being done that we would like to encourage. All right, I'm going to suggest then we move to the breakouts and that we be back here at 11:30. Is that agreeable to people? It gives us an hour and 15 minutes for the sessions plus tea and coffee. Thank you.